Hey everyone, good afternoon. It is Sunday. We are here for our Sunday weekly warm up, and you're tuning in the month of May, which is our last month for the show. This is actually our second to last episode before we take our Sunday show break, unfortunately, for the summer. But I will say, the whole month of May, we've been exclusive to YouTube. It's been such a fun platform for us to be able to offer you some exclusive content. We have an incredible interview coming. He might look familiar to some of you. I hope you're connected to him. But Garrett is here to talk through lots of things. We're talking about changing the field of education. We're talking mastery learning. We're talking younger grades than truly, typically, we usually talk about. And we're also going to dive deep into AI and how you can even use it in your classroom as early as tomorrow morning. So we'll be right back. Happy Sunday. We are here for our Sunday weekly warm-up, our second to last show of the season until we take a summer break. My name is Ray Hewer, and we have Garrett here with us. How are you doing this afternoon?
Well, it's evening here on the East Coast. It's 8. I mean, that's how it goes. But yeah, kind of wrapping.
When does that transition happen? Afternoon, evening?
I mean, for me, being an old guy, it's like 3 p.m.
Fair enough. So if it's like 4 o'clock when school ends, like evening, you're saying. Fair enough.
We're getting home, and yeah, things are wrapping up in my life. I am doing the bedtimes and the dinners and the therapy sessions with the kids. And it's a lot. I got 5 kids. So.
All right. That's what we're going with then. If you were in the comments, we'd love to hear from you what time you think evening transitions from afternoon. Garrett, I'm sorry I interrupted you though. Is your day going well?
Yeah, I mean, it's been quite productive, and now we're just kind of wrapping up the night here, and I get up at the buck crack of dawn and get right back at it on a Monday morning. So I like to look forward to Mondays rather than dreading them. And I always feel like if you're dreading Mondays, you're doing it wrong, or you're in the wrong career. You know what I mean?
Well, we talk about that a lot about that here on the Sunday show. I know Brad Hughes is usually here joining us. He is on a wonderful vacation with his family. So we're wishing him the most amazing weekend as he wraps up some time with his beautiful, beautiful crew over there. But to be honest, I feel like we talk about that a lot on Sundays, is getting excited, feeling prepared, feeling eager to start the week off in a positive way versus social media always wants me to see Sunday as a scary period of time. And we don't like to focus on that. It's not scary. We're just transitioning into another awesome week. And there's a lot to celebrate and things to keep in mind.
Absolutely. I think it's all mindset, right? And especially in teaching, where you have a profession that drains everything out of you. So it's really important to, one, on the weekends, do things that recharge you. And if you don't know those things, then it's about exploring different things and new things that might get that rest into you, even if it's just sleeping. And if you need to manifest that in some way, make that happen, because it's important.
Well, we're going to get into some ideas for all of you to make sure you're really utilizing your weekend here in just a second. But before we get into all that, I want you to really meet Garrett. Garrett, I got to interview you on Teach Better Today morning show just a few weeks ago. I'm so glad we were able to snag you for our second to last show before our Sunday weekly warm-up wrapped up for the year. Tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do, because I wouldn't even be able to do it justice. You are the busiest person alive.
I try to be. I own, to make the story short, three companies. The first is Creative Gardens. We're preschools across the country. We do a refined personalized learning model in the schools, as well as leverage some of the cool tech that my AI company, EdStart, builds, lesson planning, assessment tools. And we're building some really cool stuff with some new releases of the technology that's coming out. And then, because I'm not busy enough, I have a nonprofit called the Gardens Foundation, where we are conducting the research that it takes to inform policy on the ground to understand what a future learner 20 years from now needs to know to be prepared for life, and then reverse engineering and scaffolding an educational experience that provides a complete loop that is outside the current system, because we feel that innovation is not lacking, it's pinging against an impossible system. And so we need to provide, in order to change, the full and complete system to look at learners, preparing them for the next 20 years.
And I'm out of breath. That, he has his own hobbies. He's got a beautiful family, and he's constantly making Instagram reels. So go follow him on social media. We'll get to all that too. But you are a busy person. So you have three different organizations that you are in charge of running. I love following all three different journeys, because they're truly hitting education in three different dynamic ways. And yet you also had a full weekend of, I'm sure, child activities and fun. I mean, how do you utilize your weekend effectively without being pulled back into work or kind of being too burnt out to go back on Monday?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And I think for my family, my wife and I, we made a rule probably 3 or 4 years ago that the weekends are the weekends. And yes, of course, there's going to be, you know, sticks thrown in the spokes. But for the most part, we intentionally spend our weekends with our kids and try to, you know, get all of the tasks done. Because, yeah, they're all in softball and, you know, one's gearing up for lacrosse, one's in swim. Fallon, our youngest, is a crazy person, and so she's all over the place, birthday parties and all of that. So
but
honestly, it's about really being intentional with that. And, you know, my wife and I are still learning,
you know, sure,
right, every weekend. But I think that's the biggest thing, because then for the week, we're both almost in our own separate universes, and I'm in three universes throughout every week. So entrepreneurship has trade-off. Like, you do make your own schedule, but you're never really off, if that makes sense. So I don't know. I try my best.
I wonder if this is a good time for educators to audit how they use their weekends, especially as they head into the summer. I know, depending on where you at or in your school year, some people might be entering into their last week of school. Some might be wrapping up within the next 3 to 4 weeks, depending on where you're located. And there seems to be kind of two different approaches I see for the summer. And I'm interested in which one you feel like, or a combination of the two you feel like is the best strategy. One is you go all the way and then you hit summer and you just veg out and just completely like live in this total exhaustion space for quite some time over the summer until you try and build yourself back up to start the school year. On the flip side, some people choose to keep a schedule, but keeping a schedule can sometimes not rest yourself, rest your body, rest your mind as much as you really want it to. What's the right way for educators to do summer?
You know, that's something I think I've learned over time. I've been in education now, like, this is 26 years, which is crazy. I got started really young, but I would lean more towards the schedule side of things, but it's more towards being intentional with your time. Mm-hmm. If you're intentional in your vacations, if you're intentional in your relaxation, but you're also looking at time as you get this big break, let's use as much as we can of it. Let's 3 days a week, get up at 7, go for a run, and then, you know, go experience. Because I think the best educators share their perspective into the information that they're teaching. And to enrich your perspective, I think it's really important as an educator, especially public school, if you do get summers off, God, you're blessed, because you probably have two other jobs, right? Let's be real. But, you know, if you can be intentional with your time, I've found for me the most joy and the ability to manage the attachments we make at school for some of the really hard situations that go on at school, to be able to separate those things, you know, and have my home life, but also still be connected at schools. So
yeah, I would love to challenge our community here, whether you're listening live on YouTube or catching this after the fact, even listening on Teach Bear Talk podcast, this might be a really beautiful time to identify 5 to 6 things you might want to do this summer that you can enjoy. You know, it can be everything from I want to be outside at least 1 hour a day to I want to start a new art project and learn how to watercolor this summer to, you know, I want to hop on Duolingo and start learning another language and commit to
practicing. That's a big one.
Yeah, commit to practicing 5 times a day. Like looking at little structures you can give yourself that when you find yourself maybe feeling unmotivated, you can lean on some good hobbies or skills that you're working to pick up.
Yeah, I think also a helpful tool is I got this thing called the, I don't know if I can somewhat curse on this podcast, probably not, but Big A calendar.
There you go.
And it's got all 365 days laid out in one calendar. And what it does is it shows you what a year looks like. And it helps you to be more intentional with your time. And I just think overall, that's kind of the answer to a lot of things. But for someone, and I think the best educators have ADHD, like myself. For myself, if I go into this like summer relaxation mode, I lose my executive functioning. And I've built it all year, you know, in this pace. And I don't want to lose pace with that. So it's even more challenging for me than it is for others.
I love that. You know, we have a goal this episode, speaking of staying on track, to talking AI, because that's a huge focus of what your team does in one of the roles that you have. Before we transition into that, I'd love to get your thoughts on mastery learning. The Teach Better community here is very, very driven by wanting not only for educators to keep a growth mindset and strive to be better each and every day, but this comes from and adds to also our love for incorporating progressive styles in the classroom, which very commonly becomes a mastery learning mindset for our community. I know you yourself love the mastery learning idea and do a lot of work in this space. I'd love to make that connection for our viewers here. Tell us a little bit about your role in that.
Yeah, so I've been working in personalized learning for about 15 years. The first school I founded was in 2015, co-founded with a gentleman named Rodney Berthold called Berthold Academy. And we ended up partnering with Alt School, which is this big company out in Silicon Valley, funded by Zuckerberg and all of these great people. And so we went from 8 kids in a townhouse trying to like modernize Montessori to, you know, on the front page of Wired and Atlantic Magazine. And like, because we were all pushing towards future learning, personalized learning. And so I'm super passionate because I saw at that time, one, the effect of just the metacognition approach of personalized learning. And then two, that the tech was going to get to a place, speaking of AI, where learning was going to get really cool. And at that time, we were all thinking about machine learning. And those two things are different, machine learning and AI. And machine learning was, we were thinking as we were taking in all of this data and documenting a child's learning, we could apply machine learning so that it's learning over time, the learners, and then suggest content, curriculum, et cetera. And so when that technology didn't speed up, we ended up pulling back from that mission, and I went into early learning with the metacognition approach and then figured out the technology loop as well as the cadence for educators to deliver personalized learning at a young age. Because talk about mastery learning, you're mostly focused on those older grades, whereas I'm focused a lot on younger grades. And so understanding what mastery learning looks like from the K through 12 level helps to shape what we're doing. And it ended up being a lot of things like Reggio Emilia and Montessori, these things that were all had value, all kind of provide this scaffolding of critical thinking, logic, these tools that we know are going to be, you know, future learner success stories that, you know, these methods have been teaching for many, many years. And so, yeah, we think about mastery learning a lot because there's so many kids, including myself, that get barked at in school. Information goes in. The teacher's like, give it back, give it back. They give it back. And then you move on and there's no retention. So then at what point are we just playing the game of like, put a piece of cheese in front of a rat, push a button, you know what I mean? Like, it's becoming even more and more clear as the world starts mapping to a different way of learning, because now it's looking even more and more irrelevant within schools.
Yeah, I want to challenge our community here. If you've been a part of the Teach Better community for a while, or maybe you're a newbie, Garrett is definitely somebody that you're going to want to go connect with. He's doing incredible work in spaces that we are very, very passionate about and working with those younger grade levels. And I know that the Teach Better team continues to work with schools K-12, but we know that a great deal of our community actually lives in that secondary, middle school, and even upper elementary world. Garrett, I love that your focus is really early learners, and you seem to have a passion for even, you know, the pre-K age versus, you know, something at the high school level, but you've seen the value of connecting all of these learning experiences together, which I always enjoy learning from you about. So I think there's so many opportunities here for our Teach Better community to continue to connect and support your work.
Yeah, I think for early learners, it's a million brain connections per second. And that is mind-blowing. It's universe breaking. And so let's capture those moments early to not like control kids, but give them the respect to be autonomous co-creators of their learning journey. And if you can start early, imagine what kids that are empowered to be uniquely who they are and how they learn get put into the world. Like, even if school's a game, they're gonna be successful because they're gonna see it as the game and know how to play it and know how to play it to their strengths. So we've already seen truly amazing stuff, but we're really excited with my nonprofit because we partnered with Johns Hopkins University to conduct a study called Global Pathways, which is really mile one of the marathon. Like, how do we assess kids? Okay, let's understand that. Once we understand that, it starts drawing holes as well as through lines to start really thinking about what a future learner profile looks like. And then once we figure that out, we can really start mapping to that future learner profile. So yeah, we're doing super dorky stuff across the board. And the cool thing is now, talking about AI again, is we're able to build tools at Ed Start, see how they work at Creative Gardens, and then apply that to a future learning approach. We truly believe that mastery learning and personalized learning are the future. And so all we need to know now is taking that innovation to a new standard set that makes sense for what kids will need to be 20 years from now. AI is going to change everything, especially with some of the cool stuff that they're rolling out now.
Well, and speaking of, they just rolled out an update as early as a few days ago. So we're going to be talking about that and how you can apply it to your classroom as early as tomorrow before you wrap up with your students. If you are not yet connected to Garrett, we'll be sharing all of his contact information. But as a reminder, go check out the Gardens Foundation. They have an incredible podcast as well called What is Smart, which I see so many, you know, like amazing people on. Huge shout out to Chad Orshowski and I, who were able to be featured on that podcast, as well as so many other Teach Better family members. I feel like every week you have someone, I'm like, oh my God, I love that person. I can't wait to hear the interview. So lots more to come. We'll be right back as we talk about the new update in ChatGPT and how you can use it in your classroom. Thanks for sticking with us. We are here for our Sunday weekly warm up, and we are in our Sunday strategy section, which is usually where we like to challenge you with some food for thought. Kara is not only somebody that we could ask any single question to, so feel free to throw those in the comments. But if you are listening to this after the fact, I know one specific thing that many of you are curious about is this new update with AI. So, Garrett, we mentioned this before we even went live as we were talking about this new update. Tell us a little bit, because some people might have said, oh, wait, there was an update in ChatGPT, didn't even notice.
Yeah, so in GPT, if you have the app for your iPhone, even Android, you'll know that a lot of the functionality is still there. There's also a mode where you have headphones where it's actually engaging you in chat, but it's been very slow, meaning voice to voice. They released GPT 4.0, not 4.0 or 4.0, but 4.0. And one of the big features is real-time conversation. And the weirdest thing is it's very personal, meaning it's learning from you as you're engaging from it. You can ask it to change its tone of voice and it will, you know, talk to you in an encouraging way or a dramatic tone. And so for me, I'm always thinking, let's not get attached to building, you know, tools that are stuck in stone when it comes to this technology, because it's changing so much. So really what it's about for us at EdStart and my AI company is understanding the technology, understanding how we can help people now with it. And so teachers, talking about tools that you can use in your classroom, if you have GPT, get plus, because then you get access to 4.0 or 4.0, sorry. And then you can start the conversation literally with your voice by hitting the headphones in the app. I'll get really granular here. And literally say, you are this. So you are an assistant in the classroom that's going to help me read stories, do math quizzes, do history lessons with the kiddos. And if you can imagine as a teacher, now mind you, if your school's cool with it, you can have, especially for those high energy kids, even my own daughter who's six, we did a choose your own adventure story with her in it. It created it instantly. And then as she made choices, it went to different ways of the story. And so if you can imagine the technology, it's creating it as it's going, right? So it's never the same twice. And to me, if you can have something that's engaging and personal and you can talk to it, I think that's game changing. Now, on the other side of things, the update also released the ability for GPT to see you. So the camera comes on, it can see you, you can wave to it. It will say hi when you wave. It will literally analyze anything in real time. The privacy around that makes me nervous, to be honest with you, understanding the tech. But I do see that if that can be worked out, imagine a constant analyzing eye in your room that's totally objective, that you source simply for, you know, trends. How many kids, for me, it's early learning. How many kids are going to this environment at this time and what materials are in it? How many materials are being touched? What things about the classroom can we draw to then use in classroom management to improve it? See, that's kind of how I look at it.
You know, I think it's going to be so beautiful for those of us that are able to step away from this scary, creepy mindset to ask those questions. I love that you make this direct correlation to, if I put this in my classroom, can I get better information to serve my students? I'm with you there. But 99% of educators, I think right now, or just humans in general, are worried about this fearful element of AI. And I do think that it's come a long way in just a year, that the conversations that I've been having with educators, I feel like there was a trend over the last year or two that we're just trying to get educators to like log in and try something, right? Like, it seems like maybe we're like, tiptoeing past that point. But do you mind sharing maybe some of the dumbed down, simplistic things that an educator that's anxious to get started, but like knows that they probably need to start exploring? What are some safe things for them to do? Because I have 5 or 6 key ideas, but after maybe they've heard those, it's like, okay, what's next? And I love this story idea. I love the analytic idea. Tell me more.
Yeah. So I think when it comes to teachers and tech and fear, you know, fear, I think, is a lot driven, and this isn't a negative thing that I'm saying, from ignorance, and ignorance from lack of experience, really. And so the best way I always look at it is I try to be empathetic to the mindset of anything new, especially tech, for a seasoned educator is going to be responded with uninformed pessimism. And so I have to make sure that I'm showing the person that I'm teaching, let's say, a new AI tool to, how this can improve their time now. And I think that's the best thing about AI, is when you look at something like even a teacher in, let's say, third grade is teaching to the standards of their state. Well, a lesson planner that you enter in the standard and then some kind of personalized, you know, theme, let's say, of the lesson, and you click create, it doesn't mean you have to copy paste. What it does is it starts the process of creativity instantly, where you might be in a block. GPT is, to be honest with you, you know, exponentially smarter than you and can actually inform a lot of the things that you're doing in the classroom because it's so objective. And you become the filter, right?
Yeah. So what I'm hearing is almost to start with what's something that you find frustrating, or what is something that you're blocked in. I like the reflection of your lesson planning and you're like, gosh, I have to teach this concept, but I don't even know where to start. Like some sort of hurdle that you're encountering, maybe that's where you begin your AI exploration.
And here's another one. You can, because here's where the tech is, guys, and it's really cool, is you can have the GPT app, and I recommend to get the actual OpenAI app. Don't get the skins, if you will, out there, but get that app, and then you can actually record your lesson, your lecture, whatever you're doing, and you can have it create a quiz or a follow-up based on what it's listening to. So you only have to hit record, and then all of the work is done after that. And I know that the future, guys, whether you like it or not out there, is this technology. It's not going away. So we have to understand it now. And we have to, like Ray said, dip our feet in, get our feet wet now so that we can start moving forward. Because kids, to be honest with you, are light years beyond your thinking when it comes to this.
Yeah, it's interesting. And Danielle, I appreciate you jumping in. And Brian, we've loved your comments as well. You know, as we are reflecting on this process, I really feel as though and maybe I say this prematurely, Garrett, I'd love to hear your thoughts, but I feel like this is going to allow me to enjoy teaching, because the things that I find most challenging when it comes to educating, I'm a middle school math and science teacher, was trying to make sure I taught the standards the way they were supposed to be taught, making the assessments that I have to make because you have to assess the standards, and some of the like boring rigmarole, the academic elements. The parts that gave me the most happiness in the job was conversation with students, student one-to-one or small group conferencing, the goofing around, the jokes, right? The creativity and bringing students into a wacky environment to learn and doing something creative. Those things fueled me as an educator. It was kind of the red tape that like pulled me down. Even the parent emails, like, ugh, responding to parent emails would be so stressful. All the things that I just named that can be seen as weighing you down, AI can be very involved in and do a lot of the work for you. So hopefully your energy is going to, you know, again, that creativity and that fun element of teaching. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that's the one thing. I've said this frequently on my podcast, but the one thing that I've learned overall owning a AI company in tech is that the future of education isn't all AI. It isn't AI teaching you. In fact, AI simply does what Ray said, which is free up your time to connect with learners. We aren't going to be teaching rote knowledge anymore. That's going to become irrelevant because we have devices right now in our pockets that have access to all the information in the world. So with that being said, 20 years from now, our kids are going to need to learn soft skills, plain and simple, because it's that self-awareness, which is a soft skill, that allows us to understand who we are and how we learn. And then because of that, know our the things we're great at, the things we're not so great at, and know that knowing the things that we aren't great at is that superpower to the help collaborate with others, because they're going to be facing problems, Ray, that we have no idea, you know, we couldn't even fathom, you know what I mean?
Yes, completely. I feel like that was something, gosh, I had a keynote, and I would say this was 10 years ago, because it was not recent, that I did, that was about preparing students for the future we couldn't even imagine. And I'm like, I didn't even know we'd be here. I mean, like, this is the future, but this wasn't what I was talking about. I meant like 30 years from now, not like 5 to 10.
And it's getting faster and faster. That's the scary yet exciting part is, and I think it should be both, right? Like, I think it's responsible to look at something like AI and go, whoa, you know what I mean? And for folks like me that are building stuff in it, you have to be that first, you know, that has to be your first lens is, you know, how can we make this safe? How can we make this so that it is still filtered on the in and out by a human? You know, I think it's really important as we talk about this, but yeah, for educators out there, that's super low weight. It's stuff like that that becomes, okay, not just one lesson, ask it to make you a scaffolded 8-week lesson plan and then start from there and put your own stuff in it. We know that education is the delivery. It's not the content. And I will say that for sure, it's the delivery. It's how you engage with your learners that makes the difference. You could teach anything to anyone if they're engaged, you know, plain and simple. So that's the ways I think AI can assist us now. In the future, I don't know, especially with this stuff where you're talking to it, Ray, it's weird. If you've ever seen the movie Her with Joaquin Phoenix, with Scarlett Johansson that speaks to, like, it talks like that. It's very weird, but very cool.
I have a little obsession with tone of voice, just in general. That's been something that I've really been interested in over the last 5 years, and I am now going to go and look into this tone of voice, because that's not something I've explored yet. Did not get into my weekend plan. So that will be a part of it. You know,
it's creepy.
Yeah. You know, Garrett, I have to tell you, I'm going to have you share your contact information, how our community can stay connected to you. But
sure.
Friends, I feel as though a big role that I have in our Teach Better family, whether it be true or not, is to filter what should come into our community. And a big part of my role is doing these interviews on live shows, finding content that we should share in our Teach Better community with the hope of saying anything that we bring into this community, we wholeheartedly believe is safe, worth exploring, proactive, progressive, and really good people. I've only been connected with Garrett for a few months now, but I have been nothing but impressed. He has an incredible setup of the three companies that are very, very well working together. He's incredibly knowledgeable and overall a really, really nice person, very easy to talk to. So I want to encourage all of you to add Garrett to your PLN, because he is one direct message away after this interview of saying, hey, I heard you on Sunday Weekly Warm-Up. Would you mind hopping on a call and talking me through this? I would love to hear more. He's definitely somebody that I would add to kind of that inner circle of people that are going to challenge you, stay up to date on what's going on in education, and also be putting out a lot of good work. So Garrett, do you mind sharing where people can stay connected?
Sure. So basically for my social media, I do a lot of parenting content. Love helping parents out there with 5 kids, and this is my field. You can find me on Instagram at Wilhelm Garrett. You can find me on TikTok. That's where I'm kind of moving right now, which that is at Wilhelm Garrett. And you can find me, thegardensfoundation.org is my nonprofit. Creative Gardens, you can simply Google that and you'll see a lot of what we're doing over there at the preschool, starting a new kindergarten program. And yeah, I'm happy to help any one of you out there with anything related to this field, because it was people that helped me that ended up, you know, making those connections and helping me to do bigger things.
Absolutely. So, for those of you listening on Teach Better Talk podcast, you also have another podcast you need to go subscribe to. Garrett, where can they find your podcast?
It's What is Smart. We talk with technologists, thought leaders, educators, a lot of different people. We talked to Ray. We talked to a lot of the Teach Better team about that question, what is smart? It's those big questions we have to start asking to start informing the future. And so you can find that What is Smart is on YouTube. And you can also find it on all, you know, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all of those great places. We try to be where you can be. And it's 30 to 45 minutes, car ride home, good conversation. Gets a little heady at times, but that's good for education. No,
I really like it. It's a casual conversation. You feel like you're just listening to two friends talk, but you also really provide valuable information. Definitely, friends, if you've not listened to an episode yet, this is the time. It's a perfect summer podcast. Just binge them, because Teach Better Talk is going to be, you know, kind of on pause, giving you episodes for the summer. Our Sunday weekly warm up will be on a summer break starting as early as next weekend. And the Today Show ends this week as well. So as you're looking for your next summer podcast to just binge all the episodes possible, head over to What is Smart. It's definitely one that we'll want to get you listening to, as well as every podcast over in our podcast network over at teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Garrett, thank you again for joining the conversation on a Sunday evening.
Anytime, you know, it's going to go, it's going to be here straight to kids in bedtime.
Love it. Love it. Well, enjoy your evening, not afternoon. And for everyone else, we hope you have an incredible evening as well. We will see you tomorrow for the Teach Better Today morning show, but we're always here to support you whenever you need us. So don't be a stranger. Feel free to reach out anytime. Bye, guys.